The 2024 presidential campaign features two candidates who are very well known to Americans. And yet, there's complexity at every turn. Criminal trials for one of those candidates. Young voters who are angry. The Campaign Moment podcast from The Washington Post gives you what matters. I'm Aaron Blake, and I'm covering my 10th election cycle. My colleagues and I have insights that you won't find anywhere else. So follow The Campaign Moment right now, wherever you're listening.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casual and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Check it out now. No doubt now.
Saturday morning, the Beating the Book podcast. Gil Alexander. The podcast today, sponsored by the Football Analytics Show. It's a podcast run by Ed Fang, frequent guest on the Megapod. And during the final 2 weeks of August, he's doing the 2019 preview series, a set of 10 episodes of 10 minutes each that previews the season. That's 10 episodes of 10 minutes each. Love that idea, covering both college and pro football. Find the Football Analytics Show on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts. Check that out. Today on the show, it's our MLB Q3 derivative show. Every club in Major League Baseball, more or less rounding the 120-121 game mark. So you know how we do this if you've been a frequent listener to the show through the years. Public domain stats available on the show today, as well as the much more proprietary first five inning and first inning stats for all your betting needs. It's the Beating the Book podcast. Enjoy.
It's a numbers game with your host, Gil Alexander.
Oh, yeah. It is a numbers game right here at VSiN, Vegas Stats and Information Network, SiriusXM, Channel 204, VSiN.com, the VSiN app, and voices. If you're hearing voices in your head while I was talking right there, it's not you. It actually happened just there on the air. It's Gil Alexander. What's happening, party people? Jeff Parles, producer number five, is here as well. Good morning to you, Jeffrey. And ladies and gentlemen, joining us for what is a Q3 MLB derivative show. We'll do other things. We'll talk golf with Brady Cannon, and we'll talk about today's baseball slate as well. But it is right at the 120-game mark, 121-game mark for most Major League Baseball teams. So it is our Q3 MLB derivative show. And joining us for the first time for this endeavor, ladies and gentlemen, he was here yesterday. He's here today. Star of Jewish Follow the Money here. It's... ladies and gentlemen, it's Todd Wishnev. Good morning, Todd.
Good morning, Gil. Welcome to the Gil and Todd Show, and thanks for coming.
Thank you for having me, Todd. Yeah. Appreciate it. You excited about little derivatives here, man? Because we're going to go through all these baseball stats. And again, we're going to try to determine how much of this is narrative and how much of this is predictive moving into the last quarter of the season.
By the way, if you've heard me on this show a couple of times, I talked about how the Yankees can put any blob of meat in a Yankee stadium. Yankee uniform, and all of a sudden they hit the ball out of the ballpark. And I said, oh, well, the Yankees are probably stealing the signs like the Cardinals did a couple years ago. So this guy, David Lionetti, sent me a thing on Twitter. It's an article from the Boston Globe, why the Red Sox are looking for counter espionage inside their caps. What they're doing now is they keep switching the signs so they don't get people stealing their signs. So like if Christian Vasquez, the catcher, maybe it's the third sign one time, it's the fourth sign a different time, it's the second sign a different time. And I didn't read the whole article, but they have like a little cheat sheet in their cap as to which sign is the correct sign to foil people who are trying to steal their signs. So stealing signs is a real thing, folks. And if you watch
it's as old as baseball.
Yeah, and if you watch the Yankees with Cameron Maybin, Mike Tauchman, as you like to call him.
That's right. I'm claiming him.
Breivik Valera, and of course, my favorite guy, pizza aficionado. Now, I don't know this for sure, but I have a feeling he likes pizza. Mike Ford down at first base.
Your disdain for Mike Ford.
Actually, Mike Ford, I'm sure, is a great guy. Yeah. But you know, when you're fat, sometimes you don't like fat, and others it's like a psychological thing. You know, you hate what you see in others. So because I'm a fatso, I've got, you know, I look at Mike Ford and I go, come on, you know, you're in the major leagues. You should be, in shape. But I apologize to you. You're on the Yankees. Keep stealing the signs.
As opposed to relating to him and finding him lovable. So what you are suggesting is that the Yankees, because anyone who puts on a uniform all of a sudden becomes amazing, they have to be stealing signs.
It's tongue-in-cheek. I'm saying it tongue-in-cheek. I'm not saying I would bet on it, but I'm saying it's kind of fishy.
I understand. By the way, I am claiming Tauchman. There had to be an Ellis Island incident. I just want to point that out. All right, let's do some Major League Baseball stats. Now, here it is. It's the Q3 Derivative Show. And the point of this exercise, and we'll intersperse it throughout the show. We'll also do today's games. But we're going to narrow this down. At first, it's going to be very public domain stuff. And then we're going to narrow it down into the proprietary stuff, which is first five innings. That's not quite proprietary. The first inning stuff is super proprietary. But let's start with just the general things. These are widely available. We get these from covers.com. Let's give them a shout on this. These are the best in terms of betting stats now. We don't care about real life here for this exercise. But in terms of the betting stats, the single most profitable teams in all of baseball, a bizarro exercise, Todd, as if you bet this team every single game on the side all year long, laying a unit as a dog, risking more than a unit to win a unit as a favorite. And even when you do all that in the wash, here are your most profitable teams in baseball. Here are your most profitable clubs. It is the Yankees and the Dodgers, both at 80 and 41 in real life. See that the Yankees would have netted you in that bizarro exercise nearly 20 units, and the Dodgers would have netted you 18 units. So again, that's, you bet them every day, sight unseen. You don't care the opponent, whatever. Again, lay a unit as a dog, risk more than a unit to win a unit as a favorite. And even with the Yankees and Dodgers getting dealt big minus numbers, right, more often than not, even doing that, they're so good, right, 80 and 41 in real life, that they're still the most profitable teams in baseball.
Well, let's look at the math. If they were 80 and 40, let's just throw out the one. Let's say they were 80 and 40.
67%.
That means they would be winning two out of every three games.
Yep.
If they were minus 200 every game. Now, I assume this would be like the midpoint line, or they're just taking whatever their line was. So if they were minus 200 every single game this year, they would have broken even if you would have bet them every single game.
There it is.
So obviously, you said they're up about 18 units in 120 games.
Right. So their average price is less than
their
minus
average
200.
Price is probably somewhere in the neighborhood. I mean, I'm just doing the math off the top of my head, but probably 160 maybe. Does that sound about right? Let me think about that. 160 and 40 units. 40 times 160 is what?
Point is that they're exceeding their break even, right? They're doing better than their break even.
There it is. 40 times 1.6 is 64 losses. So right there, you know, 80 wins, 64 losses.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're talking about their average is right around 160.
Minnesota, San Francisco, and Oakland close out the three most profitable teams. This is just on money line bets. Now we're talking the Twins, who caught most of baseball by surprise early. Let's say. Generally speaking, 72 and 47 in real life, they would have netted you over 14 units this year. How about the Giants? The Giants, who are back to 500. Again, Todd Wishnev making the daily mistake of not factoring enough Giants magic into his model.
Giants magic.
Giants up 13 units for bettors. They're largely plus money night after night after night. And that's why, you know, you don't have to do better than 500 to have netted 13 units overall. By the way, we'll find out in the splits here momentarily how at home, they're not profitable, and we see that on the screen right there, just a sort of portent of things to come. But away, man, they're a cash machine. A's, by the way, the other Bay Area team who the Giants beat last night, they're the fifth most overall profitable team in all of baseball.
So another interesting point about that, in the old days, you know, you almost could never bet a minus 200. You just couldn't do it and win. And you see from these numbers here that it's almost like betting has been turned, baseball betting has been turned on its head.
This is what I said before last season. Remember, I said very early on, I said, we're about to enter an era of baseball where that chasm between the haves and the have-nots gets wider and wider. And this year, I said early in the season, if you listen to the show, I said, you almost have to shut off your brain betting baseball. And the Yankees and the Dodgers being on top of that list is the manifestation of that. They're huge favorites every night. You still would have made the most money in baseball betting on them. That says it all, right?
But you
there.
Know, you know, it's not shutting off your brain. It's actually using your brain.
You know what I mean, though.
No,
right?
I know what you're trying to say. But the point is, you really have to use your brain even more in a sense.
Value is value.
Originally,
correct.
You're going to think, oh, wait, those favorites can't make you money. But if you can recognize that some of these favorites versus the relative strength of the rest
correct.
Of the league
yes.
are not as good as it used to be.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You know, that's in effect, it's the opposite. You have to use your – I understand exactly what you mean by that.
Yeah.
But, you know, oh, just take the favorites. But I'm saying
the
you
fact,
really have
the
to
fact
figure
that you
out.
Have to recalibrate value, right? You
yeah.
have to recalibrate
it's
what value is.
A great way of
is.
Saying it, recalibrate.
Thank you, Todd. Thank you. That's why I'm here. That's why you're here, rather, to be my hype man. Flava, my Flava Flav.
You know, you're going out there and you're being cerebral. And that's what we want. We don't want physical. We want some cerebral.
Todd on football.
People
coaches
love my
yesterday.
Cerebral
they really,
line.
I love it. I was lost it yesterday. So here are the least profitable, the teams that have hemorrhaged you the most money. Now, this is a bizarro exercise, right? If you're going out and you're betting the Tigers every night, sight unseen, I would suggest to you you're probably doing this wrong. But the Tigers, if you bet the Tigers every single day of the baseball season, and again, this is the flip of the Yankees and the Dodgers, right? They're plus money and big plus money by and large when Matthew Boyd's not pitching, exception to the rule. The Tigers are 35-81. If you bet them every night, you're down 33 units.
See, now here's something that I would love to see when they do these you know charts. What about if you bet against the Tigers every night? So you wouldn't be up 33-37.
I hear what you're saying.
You would be up like 33-37 minus the VIG.
Correct.
The other way. But I think you'd still be up. But that would be an interesting
no, that's
chart
a good point.
As well.
It's a good point.
So it's just if... No one's going to bet the Tigers every night unless you're like some kind of crazy diehard Tiger fan. But what would be interesting is how – I guess we could figure
well,
it out.
Well, because that would represent the bookie's take, right? That's
right.
The straddle
well, so
you're
if we went
about.
Back the other way, 20 cents the other
right.
way.
Right, exactly.
On every – would it be every loss or every win? I'm just trying to think about that mathematically.
All right, now, there's a radio audience now. You're just – you're okay. getting too much
– Sorry, we're getting too but, mathematical.
No, but I understand your point is a good one, right? By the way, so the second most hemorrhaging team for bettors in baseball this year is the defending World Series champion Red Sox. And this is a team that obviously off a championship comes in with high expectations, so there's going to be a lot of minus money on them, particularly early in the season. And that cost bettors a pretty penny. You'd be down 26 units betting the World Series champs blindly all year long as a favorite, as a dog, every single game. Royals, Mariners, Padres, no surprise, 3-4-5. But the Red Sox are kind of the, you know, one thing is not like the other there. They're the team that stands out. And by the way, most years you have one or two or three teams that are at the bottom because the expectations or the, you know, the money, the lines getting dealt on them on a daily basis is just not commensurate with their performance. It's the Red Sox who get the booby prize on that this year.
By the way, I just did the math in my head. Now, I might be doing it wrong, but I think you'd still be up if you bet against the Tigers every game somewhere in the neighborhood of 25 to 2,600.
Yeah.
I think it's somewhere
yeah,
in there.
Yeah, 25, 26.
I could
years.
Be wrong.
No, but that's the point, right? You'd be down 33 if you bet on them, but if you had bet against them, you wouldn't be up 33.
You'd be up about 26.
You'd be up yeah. still very nicely, okay. not 33.
So, and as far as the Red Sox, well, that's an obvious... You know, this reminds me of the Cubs a couple years ago after they won the World Series. They came out and were played 500 the first half of the year. And had you just bet against the Cubs every game, you'd have been up a bazillion dollars. So this is your Red Sox World Series hangover. They're 63-59, but yet, you especially at home, look at those home numbers. I'm sure tons of that represents all those sale losses at minus
That's
200,
right.
minus 300.
He's probably a huge portion of that.
On the road, they are only down 393, so a huge amount of
well,
that.
Well, let's do we have the split numbers before we get to the split
yeah, the
numbers?
The splits are right there.
I know, but do we have a separate chart for the splits? Or we don't.
Like the home, the top home and top road?
Yeah.
Yeah, we have that.
Okay, well, before we get to that, just one last thing on there. The Padres, look at the Padres away. You would have made one United States dollar. Playing the Padres on road, based on these numbers anyway. With all of this, the point of this exercise is, okay, that's what's happened the first three quarters of the season. Now, the endeavor here is to now figure out, going into the final quarter of the season, is this just a fun thing to talk about in a narrative, or is there any predictive value to this? And I would suggest on some of these things, there will be predictive value. On other things, we're just kind of talking about it because it's fun talk about, right?
Yeah.
But there is some intuitive sense to some of the things, and moving forward, we'll find out more of that. But let's do the home road splits. Just as
By the way, one other point.
Yes,
the
please.
Mariners, if I remember correctly, might have been 12-3 to start the year.
13-2, my friend.
Okay, 13-2. So if you take those 15 games out, dude, they're Tiger-like.
They are Tiger-like. No question they're Tiger-like. All right, so now this is, again, just we'll do the home teams, the subset of what we just found out. The Dodgers, who are second overall, they're the number one home team for baseball bettors this year. 48-16 at home, 20 units in people's pockets at home, so which means, by the way, that they're slightly negative on the road, if I'm not mistaken, the Dodgers. Rangers, I wouldn't have expected the Rangers, but they're there. Rangers, very profitable at home, second most profitable team at home because they're 35-22 at home. Astros, Yankees, Cubs, and boy, do the Cubs have a stark home-road split that we keep seeing night after night. Cubs get 14 Ks from Quintana last night and managed to lose again. They're 2-3 on their current road trip, which has five more games left in it, and the St. Louis Cardinals are knocking at the door in the NL Central, one back. But the Cubs, fifth most profitable home team, least profitable home teams, oh, what do you know, it's the Tigers and the Red Sox at the bottom there. What is perhaps the usual suspects, if I could say that. Let's just go real quick to the away teams here. This is just overall. These are widely available. Again, these are courtesy of Covers. Most profitable road teams, the San Francisco Giants. Los Gigantes will be up almost 14 units for bettors, closely followed by the Twinkies and the Rays. Braves are up. Those are the four teams that would have netted you double-digit units just betting them on the road blindly. Least profitable road teams, the aforementioned Chicago Cubs. Worst road team money-wise in baseball. The Marlins are the only team worse record-wise in the National League in real life, but because the Marlins are always getting plus money and the Cubbies are oftentimes in minus, even on the road, Cubs would have hemorrhaged you 15 units if you just bet them blindly on the road. They're 23-36 on the road, and they lead a division in baseball. Royals, Mets, Tigers, Astros. Tigers on all.
Astros is the one that really shocks me.
On the road.
35-27, but yet down 870, which tells you.
They're always big money. They're still on the road. They're still huge money. By the way, last night, very strange circumstance with game two of that doubleheader. We talked a little bit about this off air.
Yes.
Gerrit Cole was expected to be the game two starter. And he was, what, like -360, something like that?
Some people are saying 380.
Maybe 380. It depends where you were shopping. But there was a pitching change really late. Like, really late. It wasn't like people had a chance to really adjust to it.
5 minutes before the game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the line didn't really didn't move that much off it.
But usually they move it automatically.
It was very strange because who was it? Divinsky?
Divinsky went off 360, and I was like, that can't be right.
I don't remember a circumstance like that was so close to game time, and then I didn't even realize that was the line going into it, Divinsky, until someone mentioned it later. I was like,
oh, I didn't notice it either until it was like in the third inning, and I looked up and I said Divinsky -360. Usually they air move it when there's a pitching change. It's not like anybody moves it with the money.
It was very odd.
They just quickly air move it, and I would think they would at least move it down like to 280 or 250.
Yeah, I wasn't exactly paying attention at that moment.
And, of course, they lose the game.
And, of course, they lose the second game, right? That's right, 4-1 to the White Sox.
They had a lot of their hitters out in the second game.
We'll come back. We'll do the best and worst run line teams for bettors in all of baseball. Then we'll talk first five innings. We'll talk umpire. Well, we'll get to first five eventually. But we'll talk umpires. We'll talk starting pitchers. We'll do it all. The Q3 MLB Derivative Show. Todd Wishnev is here, as well as Jeff Parlay. Gil Alexander right here on A Numbers Game at VSiN.
Welcome back to A Numbers Game with Gil Alexander.
Producer number five, Jeff Parles, tells me that we got Charles Barkley back in the intro of the show. Is that true? I stepped on him?
We all stepped on him.
Okay.
We didn't realize where Barkley was in the intro.
So I got to let him breathe.
So we
got to
let him
little.
Breathe. We'll have. It's been a big Twitter discussion the last
week. It really has.
It's amazing how much the folks love Chuck.
Do we have Barkley on the fade out or something? All right. I got to let it breathe. We'll hear it next time. We get tweets. Beating the book. Love y'all for tweeting us. Okay, more baseball. best worst run line teams in all of baseball. Again, bizarro exercise when you're betting these teams on the run line each and every single game of the season, which no one is actually doing, but it gives us a sense of which teams have been profitable and least profitable for bettors. Remember, run line, when you're a favorite, you're giving a run and a half. When you're a dog, you are getting a run and a half. So a lot of one-run outcomes will affect these numbers. I like to call it, Todd, a de facto power ranking. Because when you win big. When you lose, sometimes you keep it close, or oftentimes if you're on the most profitable list. Most profitable run line teams in baseball, excuse me, the New York Yankees. No surprise there. They'd have you up 31 units plus. Again, these courtesy of covers.com. The Rangers and A's, Diamondbacks, and Indians wrap up the top five run line teams in baseball for bettors. Now, it's a big drop from the Yankees to the Rangers, right? It's 18 units. Like, the Yankees are far and away the best run line team in baseball this year, because when they win, they crush you.
But
the Rangers, A's, Diamondbacks, and Indians probably surprise a lot of people.
Diamondbacks, certainly. I think the Yankees kind of make sense because, of course, they mash.
Sure.
And then they have the decent relief, so they don't let you back for a one-run win when they should have won by two or three. And then the Texas Rangers kind of make sense to me because you don't really ever see the Rangers win a close game, you know, because they have a terrible bullpen. They either just were killing the ball and winning or just losing, you know? And now they don't even hit, but I'm saying earlier in the year.
But if the Rangers are 68 and 51 in run line games, doesn't that suggest that they're losing a lot of one-run games probably?
Well, I would imagine, yeah. And it goes to Todd's point, yeah. You could see them have leads and the bullpen blew it a lot earlier in the year for Texas. They lost a bunch of one-run games when they were getting the run and a half.
I'm efforting, as we speak, the Rangers' one-run record just to see if it if it makes sense, and they're 19-19 in one run game. So that is a very curious record to me.
Now, on the least profitable, this is saying if on the run line, if you're minus 1.5 or plus one and a half.
Both.
Okay, right, so this things. Is kind of confusing a little
it
bit.
It is a little bit, yes, because you don't know how
there should
it
be two
out.
Sets of stats. There should be minus 1.5 and plus 1.5, minus 1.5, plus 1.5.
I've always said that. I think you're right about that. But for the purposes of today, Tigers, once again, the least of the least, right? 27 units down on the run line. Doesn't matter. They're just bad. Red Sox, once again, second worst on the run line. Rockies, O's, and Pirates wrapping up that list. And Rockies make sense, right? Because they play at Coors, and so you are more likely to lose games by more than a run.
And the other thing is the Detroit Tigers are probably plus a run and a half out of those 116 games. I bet you they're plus a run and a half 100 times.
So you don't like that one. I agree with you. I understand what you're saying.
Yeah.
By the way, Jeff Parlay, you had a point about the Astros to Todd was saying before.
Well, and also I would imagine it impacted that list too, because the Astros were minus 270 or whatever the heck they were on Sunday when they lost on the run line also. But they lost yesterday, minus 360. They lost almost minus $5 on Sunday. So there's a little over 8 units right there.
So the road,
road
money
record
line
is what it is.
Yeah, the road money line, they lost 8 units 2 out of the last 3 games, right? Yeah.
It's incredible. It's surprising you don't even have the RJ special. We call it the RJ special out in the sports book. RJ likes to lay the
RJ, the almonds guy?
Yes, the almonds
point.
Guy. Uh-huh. He lays the 2.5 sometimes in the ridiculous lines.
Yeah.
And so we call it the RJ special. You don't have the 2.5.
Did you want to share with people what RJ says about some of the employees? This is one particular employer at the South.
No, you didn't want to share that. I think that should be left unsaid.
He really is a fan.
He's a fan of. Yeah. He's a great guy, RJ.
He is a great guy. Let's go to, now this is for, let's do the pitchers real quick, starting pitchers, most least profitable starting pitchers. So this is, I don't know how you feel about this again, Todd, but this is when this particular pitcher or pitchers takes the hill, this is how his team ultimately performs with a win-loss record and then the associated profit or loss.
Okay, this is interesting.
Well, it's interesting because sometimes it doesn't have anything to do with the starter, right? They can have a marginal performance, but the team just happens to come through for them.
Or, that's interesting,
Or the oppo of that. Do we have these at all, Jeff, at all with the starting pitchers?
I'll read them off here.
Okay, give me the most profitable starting pitcher.
So I'll read them off here. Domingo Germán is number one. You're getting a little over 12 units on Germán. Andrew Cashner,
Germán, let's clarify why. Germán, the Yankees are 17-3 in games that Germán takes the hill. Yeah.
Wow.
But he just shows up and they win baseball games because Tauchman crew go crazy.
You know, I think there's something to that, actually, because I've seen, you know, I noticed this on really good teams when they lose sometimes. It's when their big starters in or something. And then I don't know. I don't have any data to back this up.
Yeah, Josh Towers would say it's a random.
Okay.
But to your point,
it feels like that certain teams, like the good teams, know when they have a guy on the mound that they have to pull across for them, and they hit better. I don't know if that's true again, and probably is just totally random.
One of those random Orioles Cy Young winners in the 80s, I don't know if it's Scotty McGregor or Steve Stone. Someone would have to check on this.
Jim Palmer.
But the Orioles would never lose when they were on the hill. Or Flanagan. One of these guys would just have a ridiculous... Yeah. And it was, you know, in those days we weren't into analytics as much, right? So it was like, oh, he never loses. His win-loss record is unbelievable. But it, they would just show up for him every time, right?
Kiki Ayala.
Yeah. Some
Al Bumbry.
Al Bumbry with the glove sticking out the back.
John Lowenstein.
Gary Renicky. We interrupted Jeff Parles. Oh, so it's Domingo Germán. Here they are on the screen, Jeff. Did you catch that Andrew Cashner had his first career save last night?
Andrew Cashner. The new Red Sox closer, that's what I'm saying right now.
Yeah, by the way, Jeff and I were watching at the same time. We were on the phone, and he looked phenomenal. He looked great as a closer.
He probably should be a closer.
Yeah. Cashner's number two. So these are, again, the most profitable starters in all of baseball this year. If you bet that team blindly when they started a game. So the Red Sox are 11-6 when...
Well, remember, no, it was a lot
Orioles. Oh, yeah, the Orioles and the Red Sox. Remember, he had this... With the Orioles, he was in plus money so much time that the ROI was huge. But the teams that he has pitched for, Orioles and Red Sox, 11-6 when he's taken the hill. Brandon Woodruff, 16-4.
Well, that makes a lot of sense because if you think about it, guys that don't come in with big, that come into the season with big reputations,
right,
aren't going to have big numbers.
That's
so
right.
If they have big years, they're going to have giant ROI because of that.
Makes a lot of sense. Brandon Woodruff of...
Same thing with Ryu. Ryu wasn't exactly considered the best starter in baseball, was he?
He wasn't considered the best starter or the second best on his own team.
Point taken. Wade Miley, my favorite guy. Wade Miley.
For those listening on radio, Todd, let's explain what's going on here.
Sorry.
This is not a television broadcast exclusive.
I thought they could see the... No.
Brandon Woodruff, again, Brewer 16-4 when he takes the hill. They're up almost 11 units, betting them blindly. Hyunjin Ryu, fourth place, 17-5. Dodgers 17-5 in games in which he started, up almost 10 units. Wade Miley, as Todd just pointed out, 17-7, the Astros, 17-7 with Miley on the hill. So,
and look at that. It's interesting because they're 9-65, and they're 10 games over 500.
Right.
So he probably hasn't been that big a favorite, Wade Miley,
probably
on
too.
Average.
That's right. And then the least in ROI in terms of the pitchers, the ones that have hemorrhaged you the most money, no surprise.
Now,
this list is always riddled with big names because big names have big juice. And when they have a season that is not stellar, this is what happens very quickly. Chris Sale, your least profitable, your biggest hemorrhager of money in all of baseball as a starter because the Sox are 9-15 in games in which he started. That would cost you 20 units. So if all you did was bet Chris Sale starts, you're 20 units down in baseball.
And a lot of them were at home where he was even bigger juice.
That's right. Jacob DeGrom. The Mets are 9-15 when he takes the hill. Just they haven't been as big favorites overall as Sale has been with the Red Sox. So he would have cost you 15-plus units, not 20-plus like Sale. Max Scherzer, third in terms of the hemorrhage list. Over 10 units for bettors this year because the Nats are 9-11. And then you got Tyler Molly and Aaron Sanchez.
And
Aaron
Sanchez, they stink.
Well, Aaron Sanchez, one of the most underachieving pitchers by advanced stats thus far this year. We'll come back, we'll do umpires, and then we'll get into the proprietary stuff. First five, and specifically proprietary on the first inning stuff. Right here on the Q3 MLB Derivative Show, we'll do today's slate. Todd Wishnev alongside here on A Numbers Game at VSiN.
Welcome back to A Numbers Game with Gil Alexander.
VSiN's Pro Football Betting Guide will be ready for download on Friday. In case you were wondering, just 48 hours from now, purchase the 60-page digital magazine before Friday. Get it for $9.99. After Friday, though, $19.99. Or get the College Football Betting Guide along with the Pro Guide for just $25. And both guides feature your favorite VSiN guys in the desert, including Brent Musburger, Michael Lombardi, Matt Eumanns, Dave Tooley. We all are on a chart there with all of our pro football picks. Even I managed to show up on this one with a late... Wait, what's the... I asked Lombardi on the air. Wait, what was the deadline? He's like, it was today, Gil. So I just put it in today. So I'm going to get in there late, I'm told. But we all have our picks, division by division, in the NFL, conferences, Super Bowl, and then individual awards as well. But 52 issues of Point Spread Weekly If you want our all-access subscription, 52 issues of Point Spread Weekly, all of our special betting guides, access to all live video and replays, daily email that recaps our shows, online exclusive stories and power ratings, all of that at VSiN.com/betfootball for the plan that works for you, whether it's the all-access, whether it's the pro alone, whether it's the pro and college football betting guides together, all of that at VSiN.com/betfootball. Let's do some umpires real quick. This year, umpires, the most reliable over umpires, the most reliable under umpires. This for primarily for totals bettors, but also for side bettors. And again, you can get umpire assignments at sites like StatFox, that kind of thing. That, you know, as early as anywhere.
Let me guess. Alan Porter is a very big over.
Todd Wishnev? Number four.
I didn't even look at that. The reason I knew is because Antoine, this guy who sits in the
fist pound. That's a nice one right there. Can we reach?
One of the guys who sits out there with us in my living room here at the South Point sports book, we always talk about Alan Porter being a super over. That's how I knew that name.
So Alan Porter, what you're saying is Alan Porter's strike zone is the size of a thimble.
Yeah, he's not giving you any edge strikes, basically. Yeah. So you better, you know, you better have some major movement on your pitches.
All right, but if these names come up, now we don't have Borchardt on the show to sort of compare it with historical analysis. He was unable to make it this morning. But your best over umpires this year, anyway, Tom Woodring, 6 out of 7 games that he's been behind.
Can I stop you right there,
please?
Why does that guy only have 7 behind the home plate?
That's just how assignments work.
And the other guys have like 19. Because how is that possible?
That's just how they're used and their assignments.
No, but explain that to me.
I don't know the umpires how they work their schedule.
It very simple, Todd. Some guys shift between AAA and the major leagues, just like players.
Yes.
So Todd Woodring is a guy who shifts
between AAA. Oh, I didn't know there was shifting of umpires.
Yeah, there are guys
who get more assignments, and then some people get more home plate assignments.
Exactly.
Right, but did you know they pull up umpires from AAA?
I actually did, yeah.
Well, look at you guys. Okay, I learned something today.
Anyway, continuing. Todd Woodring, 6 of 7 behind home plate, have gone over. Jeff Kellogg, 10 of 13 when he's been calling balls and strikes, have gone over. John Bacon.
He's a very non kosher strike zone.
Yeah, well, I don't know if we should include John Bacon.
I'm sorry, that was a matzo ball. I hit it out of the park.
3 of 4 games. It's only 4 game sample size, so we're not going to read into John Bacon. But there's your Alan Porter, 14 of 19 have gone over when he's been calling balls and strikes. And Alfonso Marquez, 16 of 22 have gone over when he has been behind home plate. Now, these, you know, again, narrative or predictive. Here's the thing. When we have Borchardt, we're able to really determine a lot of these guys consistent with their careers in terms of going over under. Here are the most reliable under guys. Nick Marley, 6 of 8 behind home plate, unders. Kerwin Danley, 12 of 16, under. Joe West, 16 of 23, under. Andy Fletcher, 13 of 19, under. And Jansen Visconti, 15 of 22 have gone under when he has called balls.
These are guys that just want to get back to the buffet. If you watch baseball like I do, a lot, you will notice that there are guys that call strikes 6 to 7 inches off the plate, and you know they're just thinking, let's get back to the buffet and back to the hotel.
So let me give you a case in point of that. You see the 9th inning of the Cubs game last night? Anybody who's watching this is nodding right now and going, oh my God. I want to say it was one man on and nobody out, but don't hold me to that. The Cubs were down 2 to the Reds. They ended up losing by 2 to the Reds yesterday.
The Phillies, right?
The Phillies. I'm sorry. Yeah, they played the Reds before that. So they ended up losing by 2, 4-2. They were down 4-2 in the 9th. And was it Tony Kemp that was up? And it was a 3-2 pitch, which was not only high, but was super outside. Kemp would have had to look like a little leaguer to make contact with it. Like, we just had to, like, wildly swing at it. Strike 3 called. Talk about wanting to just get out of there. It was unbelievable.
I'm joking, but I'm not really joking.
Yeah. Balls. We talked about it with the Dodgers Padres game a couple weeks ago, and I was on the Dodgers. Like, it could have completely changed the game. It called strikes that were just way out of the strike zone. You're like, come on, we need some sort of robotics here for this.
It's ridiculous. So aggravating.
It is so aggravating.
And then the other one is where they stand like all the way to one side of the catcher, and then the catcher puts his glove over on that side, and then he reaches across while it's still fully in the strike zone.
Oh, that drives
me
crazy.
And it's, you could see it's in the box because a lot of these games have the box.
It will bisect the box.
It's so down. It's not down the middle, but it's on. It's right. in clearly. It's not even on the edge.
Right.
And they miss it. And they, because well, they're so far on the other side.
Not only did he miss it, you wonder if they're like, well, I'm not going to give him credit for that because the target wasn't there.
Oh, it's so aggravating.
That drives me nuts, too. Oh, there's so many of those things in baseball.
And this reminds me. I was reading an article yesterday online on Twitter. They had some article where they rated the home broadcasting guys from each team.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like, and I hear a lot of them because I'm the retard out there, or I'm the mentally challenged person out there.
Who's second best to Kipe and Kruko?
They were way up there.
Phenomenal.
And I get the box, so I listen to all the different games that I want to hear. And, of course, I thought the Mets would be way up there because I love Keith Hernandez, Ron Darling, and Gary Cohn. And, mm-hmm. of course, they were, like, in the top three or something. But I knew right off the bat, if this was going to be a good ratings, the Pirates would be way down because I can't even listen to the Pirates. It's so boring.
Interesting.
29th they were. They were 29th.
The Tigers guys got in a scuffle last year. The two, they fought each other.
I mean, the new one with Kirk Gibson sounding like he's high on pot is not. Have you ever heard Kirk Gibson, by the way, do a game?
The views of Todd Wishnev are not representative of a numbers game review.
He's like, it's like real, real mild.
Are you sure that he's just disinterested with just the terrible
Kirk,
product on the
Kirk,
field?
I'm sure you're
that's
a great guy.
That's a good point,
Look,
Jeff.
Is Michigan, do they have recreational weed yet?
We'll Google. Google that.
Yes. Okay.
Yes, we'll Google that. Yeah. We'll come back. We'll resume with the first five and the first innings on the Derivative Show, and we'll get to today's slate. We'll do it all on a numbers game right here at VSiN.
Welcome back to A Numbers Game with Gil Alexander.
We left that conversation hanging about the that list of the best local baseball announcers. Yeah. This radio or television? Television.
TV.
Yeah, TV. Yeah.
And I guessed correctly that the San Francisco Giants, Dwayne Kuiper and Mike Kruko, who are just an institution there, are top five, you said.
Yeah.
Who were some of the others in the top five?
San Diego.
Interesting.
The Mets.
The Yankees were not, huh?
No, Yankees were not. It was San Diego, the Mets, Oakland A's.
Oh, what? Glenn Kuiper and Ray Fosse.
And Dallas Braden, right? Isn't he part of it? He's also
He might be part of it. But I also guessed off air. I guessed dead last. And I feel bad that I guessed it because I don't think they should be dead last. But I knew that they would be
the Nats,
somewhere.
Yeah.
And that's the Nationals with
FP
Santangelo.
Here, Gil, I have the actual list in front of me. Todd was slightly off on the actual list little bit, but not terribly. Nats were last. Nats got a hearty 1.5.
The thing I wanted to make the point of is that I knew the Pirates were going to be terrible, and they came in
29. Well, the Pirates do this weird thing where they rotate five guys between radio and television. So there's never consistency. Yeah. So
but they don't announce the game.
No, they're
it's just like dead air for
they're
like 45 seconds.
Guys.
Can I just say Parles knows his announcing team?
Oh, my God. Parles?
Yeah.
We're talking off air. Parles can give you like inside like the third string announcer this club. It's amazing.
Shout out 506 Sports.
Gary Thorne and in Baltimore, is he in top five?
I'm pulling it up. Number one, I was surprised that they're a good crew. Orsillo and company in San Diego were number one.
Wow.
Which I was surprised at. They're very good. By the way, apparently Jim Cott is doing Twins games now, which I did not realize.
Wow.
He did the Yankee games for a while. Number one is number one, San Diego. Number two, San Francisco. Number three, the Mets. Number four, Gary Thorne and company in Baltimore.
Yeah.
Number five was the Dodgers.
Oh, the Dodgers were number
five. The Dodgers were five. The Angels are six.
Okay.
I was surprised I wasn't mentioned because here at the South Point.
That you were not mentioned?
Yeah.
Oh,
I'll tell you why.
You do games here?
I do. When I have a team and one of my guys is about to go yard, you know, I'm like, it's way back gone.
Tennis picks, everybody. Tennis picks in our remaining
Wait,
2 minutes.
Before you get to the tennis picks, I want to tell you what one of the guys, this guy Diggs out there, he goes, you know, Todd, I couldn't watch a single baseball game, you know, if I was just by myself. He goes, I come here and I watch them with you. You make it exciting.
All right.
Really?
So
now, I'm sure there's also people annoyed as well.
So people who want the Wishnev play-by-play, you come to the South Point.
I'm sure there's half people annoyed, half people enjoying.
You might want to jigger that.
Well, it's probably more like
rejigger that ratio.
Enjoying one annoyed?
Yeah, it's maybe not 50-50.
Okay.
I'm sure some do. Coming back, more derivatives.
Welcome back to A Numbers Game with Gil Alexander.
We get texts We get tweets. Chris Valica, friend of show, friend of network, was piling on when we were going through all those old Orioles in the 80s. He goes, Tim Stoddard. Yes, that's another great one. And then my buddy E., who knows of such things, he points out, I think this is a great point about the baseball announcers and that the San Diego Padres broadcast team ended up number one on the favorites list. He points out, Mark Grant and Don Orsillo, he said, are awesome, and they got to be because the team sucks so bad.
Same with the Baltimore Orioles.
Same with the Baltimore Orioles. I mean, think about all the space you've got to fill when your team, especially when your team is awful.
This was also the case for years when the Mets weren't good. That's why that crew also is highly rated.
It's an art.
Able to fill space.
Well, but they're so good. Keith Hernandez and Ron Darling, they're just so good. And Gary Cohn, they're really, really good. I actually like listening to them, you know, just regular.
Here are MLB teams. We'll resume the Q3 derivatives here. So now we're talking first five innings. So again, what if this is just narrative? What if this is predictive? What can we actually use here to help ourselves make bets moving forward? First five innings, Major League Baseball. Now from Team Rankings, our friends over there, Tom Federico and company over there at Team Rankings, they cull together the first five innings runs per game. So just from a raw data standpoint, what's the team that plates the most runs in the first five innings? Pitchers that they face aside, lineups aside, what are the clubs that plate the most runs in the first five innings? Minnesota Twins, 3.51 runs per first five innings. They are the most prolific offensive team just on that average runs plated. In the first five, no surprise, the Yankees are second. No surprise, it's Red Sox, Astros. Maybe the Diamondbacks are a little bit of a surprise, but those are your top five. Largely, no surprises there. Twinkies, obviously, with all those home runs this year, trying to get the 300 home runs, for God's sakes, not a surprise. Now, the lowest is interesting to me because I always say this. This is so representative of folks who, you know, you make a first five-inning bet on these teams, and it's the experience. It's not only that you've got your money tied up, it's the experience of having to live through these teams in the first five. They are so anemic offensively that you know, like, it's just torture watching these teams. And the Miami Marlins, this is a great sort of poo-poo platter of the worst teams, and these are largely why these teams are just not among baseball's elite, to be kind. Miami Marlins, they played less than two runs, fewer than two runs, per first five, 1.93. You're betting on the Marlins. You're living through that. That's not fun. Giants not much better. Tigers not much better. 2.11, 2.12.
Magical San Francisco Giants.
That is the 500 magical team of the decade, San Francisco Giants. Three World Series titles. By the way, is it an even year?
No, but are these stats from this year or from...
This is this year. This is just this year.
That's what I thought.
First five runs per game. Follow along, Mr. Wishnow.
I was making a joke because we were saying
sorry.
The Giants.
I'm sorry. That's right. I get it. I'm sorry. Chicago White Sox, fourth worst. Now, the Cardinals, you've made this point before. The Cardinals, who right now are ensconced as the number two wild card team in the National League.
They stink.
And they only score 2 points. Todd's expert analysis right there. Could you repeat that? They stink.
They can't hit the ball.
2 point, and here it is, corroborated by the numbers, by the data. 2.31 runs per first five. And yet they're in the playoffs if it starts today.
You know,
and by the way,
been surprised.
Oh, and by the way, they're one game behind the Cubs in the NL Central. One.
Because it's a stinker division.
It is a stinker division. By the way, Cubs are no good.
Cubs stink, too.
By the way,
the Cubs at home are pretty good.
Todd, since they stink, that seems to be a prerequisite for the Cardinals winning a World Series, that in the middle of August, the team stinks. Look at 06 and 2011.
I don't think this team's winning the World Series. But
I have an off-the-grid mano-a-mano bet with my buddy E, who's the greatest sports bettor of all my friends, and anybody I know. And we get in these sports arguments, and we always settle it by just making a bet, and we never talk about it. Like, that ends the argument. You know, so it's like, okay, right. Well, if you feel so strongly about it, smart man, let's make a bet.
Right.
So we have a bet. Cubs to make the playoffs, Cubs to not make the playoffs.
And you're on.
I'm the not make the playoffs. I got them at plus 200. To which he responded, well, I got a great line because the DraftKings number is the Cubs to make the playoffs at like minus 576. I'm like, well, if you think that line's any good, you're ridiculous. Right. So we have that going the rest of the year. So we're very involved in how the Cubs do on a night-to-night basis.
By the way, what was interesting about that, I don't mean to...
No, that was the end of the story.
But when you were talking about the first five, I'm sure there's some math people out there who can tell us, are runs evenly distributed in all innings? Now, I have never done the data on this, but... I can just tell you from watching all the games, the fifth inning seems to have a lot of runs.
There's no way there's equal distribution.
Right.
Anymore.
I would love if somebody could Twitter out what the distribution of runs per inning is in a regular ball game. I'm going to guess that the fifth inning is a big runs inning.
You can Twitter it out or you can tweet it out, whichever you want to do.
I call it Twittering because tweeting.
What does Jimmy Vaccaro call it? What does he call it? Twexting or something?
He made up a word.
By the way, I've yet to see Jimmy since he's been back.
Well, you just have
you're just not here at the right time. That's all it is.
I know. So now opponents, if you're curious, opponents, what do teams' opponents played per first five runs? Because you want to see the defensive side as well. The Dodgers are the best at muting runs in the first five innings. They're the best at run prevention first five innings. Dodgers, basically, their starting pitching staff turns every opponent into the Miami Marlins first five.
That's really good.
They only give up 1.9 runs per first five. The Rays, Reds, Nats, and Astros. And there's no surprises there, right? Because, well, the Rays might be to some people because the Rays use an opener a lot. So the Rays give them credit, right? Give them credit for how they manipulate their starting staff. The opener strategy works for them, and there's the numerical representation of that. With the Dodgers, Reds, Nationals, and Astros, very intuitive because you're like, oh, yeah, those are the embarrassment of Rich's starting staffs. All of those teams, including the Reds, who have now recently acquired Trevor Bauer. But they've got Luis Castillo, Sonny Gray as well. But the Nats with Strasburg and Scherzer and Corbin, the Astros with, good Lord, everybody, right? Verlander, Cole, on down the line. Greinke now. And then there's the Dodgers, who, again, we said Hyun-Jin Ryu might be the best pitcher on their team this year, but would you take him even second in a playoff rotation? I don't know that you would with that team, with Walker Buehler and Clayton Kershaw on the same staff. By the way, most allowed first five, the Orioles on the Orioles Baseball Network. 3.62, that's how much they give up first five. Mariners, Rockies play at Coors, so that's always on a curve. Pirates and Rangers, all of them give up more than three runs per first five, with the Orioles giving up 3.62 leading the way, leading in quotes.
Just think how bad the Rockies are at hitting when they're not in the first on the other chart. Like, they should be in the top five just because they get to play in that stupid stadium, but they're not. That just shows you how bad they are on the road, and you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's kind of interesting.
Joe Osborne puts together the first five records for these teams. So we've sort of buried the headline on the first five because those are just the raw numbers in terms of output and input, if you will, if I could use that. But Joe Osborne puts together first five. I usually rely on Onside Sports. My boy's over there at Onside Sports for these, but they're far too busy this year to be culling these stats together. So Joe Osborne with the best first five records and the best first five and the worst first five money. So we'll do money first. Oakland A's, the most profitable first five team. So basically what we did for the full game at the top of the show, this is the best first five. So if you bet the A's first five, blindly favorite, underdog, and remember there are ties involved in first fives. But when you put it all in the mix, the A's are the best first five team in baseball for bettors. Yankees, Twins, Rays, Diamondbacks. A lot of those teams showed up on the most runs produced or the least runs allowed in the first five in the raw data we just talked about. So
that's
A's, Yankees.
Interesting, though, that you remember when we were talking about the most profitable teams, they were up like 1,800 and 1,900 and et cetera. But yet, when you go in the first five, you're only up 950. Is that because of the ties?
Well, there's ties involved, right? But what's another reason, Mr. Mann? The straddle is wider.
Oh, very good. Look at you.
Oh, thanks.
Look at the big brains on Gil.
Thanks for inviting me on your show. least profitable teams in the first five. The Orioles, it's the other way around. The Toronto Blue Jays, who, by the way, are on fire. And I keep saying this every day. If you had the Blue Jays under, you were already counting your money. Not so fast.
Wow, they're the worst team in the first five.
But they're the worst money team when it comes to first five. The Tigers, who are always on these, right? The Giants, who we talked about moments ago. The Rockies, again, they play, of course. And the Orioles. But the Blue Jays are worst first five. And that is intuitive, right? Because
Sanchez has been bad.
Name their ace. Right? Name their second best pitcher.
Name their pitcher.
Name their pitchers, right.
Wags pack.
If you took anybody in this casino right now that's out here at the South Point behind us and you're like, can you name a Toronto Blue Jays starting pitcher? What do you think the hit percentage on that would be?
42%.
of people in the casino would be way less than that.
Oh, in the entire casino or the sports book?
In the sports book. It wouldn't even be 42%.
Really?
I promise you it wouldn't be 42%. Okay. Do we have the raw records of those teams, by the way, Jeff?
I will read those out right now. The Dodgers have the best record in the first five, followed by the Atlanta Braves, who show up at number two, mm-hmm. the Yankees at three, the Twins at four, and Tampa at number five.
So nothing surprising there.
Nothing too surprising.
The money was what was interesting. Yeah.
The money was more surprising. Yeah. This is just the bad teams. The Orioles have the worst one, then Detroit, then Toronto, then the San Francisco Giants actually come up at number four, and then it is the Rockies.
Yeah, Rockies. So, again, the Rockies always squirrely.
For predictive purposes, really what this whole exercise tells us is...
I was just about to get to this, yes.
Oh, okay, I'm sorry.
No, say what you're going to say.
Oh, I was going to say that if you can pick out some teams, like every year in Major League Baseball, there's a couple teams, maybe one or two teams, that late in the season starts playing really much better than they've played the whole year. Mm-hmm. Some people say maybe it'll be Toronto because they started playing well. But if you remember last year, Tampa Bay Rays were not a good team up until about August. Then they won every single game for the rest of the year practically, except one when they were up like 8-2 in the ninth and blew the lead.
So what qualifies here then? What's your takeaway from this season's exercise on this?
I would say you have to be looking at teams maybe like the Marlins. They kind of hang around and they try every game. I'm not sure if it's the Marlins, but I'm saying in the next week or two, you might get a sense that there's teams that are playing way above what they've played the rest of the year.
I mean, I'm going to tell you what I've taken away from this, and we'll get to the first innings. That's the last thing we have to go, and then we'll talk about today's slate. But what I've taken away from this year's exercise is exactly what I predicted before last season and what I said this season the whole way about betting baseball. The fact that the Dodgers and the Yankees are the most profitable teams we already talked about, like with all that minus money, just says everything about baseball. It's like, wow. Even when you have to lay those numbers, there's still value on them. And even
but you think that they will continue
and
to
I
be.
Think they will continue to be.
Because they're starting to jerk them up to like ridiculous.
Well, yeah. Exactly. So now you have to ask, okay, well, will this continue in the last 40 games? Well, I think they will in the short term. Like, because they're not going to sit anybody short term yet.
But think about this. If they were average 156, mm-hmm. or according to Mike Palm, 150, whatever.
You guys should fight.
Let's say they were average 156, okay?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Going forward, I think if you take the next 40 games, they are not going
they're
to average 156.
It'll be higher.
They're going to be much higher.
And therefore, they could be not. They might not be profitable is what you're saying.
We might have missed the boat.
We might have missed the boat. There's no question we might have missed the boat, which is why I keep saying, you know, you have to determine what's predictive, what's not. I guess what I'm saying is, what does all of that tell us thus far? I don't think there's a lot of gems this year because of that dynamic, though, to actually cull. Like, usually with some of the years, we're like, oh, my God, Tampa Bay. Like, I never would have thought they're that great first five. Like, last year, that was the big thing. They kept coming up as the best first five team, Q1, Q2, Q3. And it was like, oh, this is very interesting about the Rays, this opener thing. And by the way, I don't know if it was last year or the year before. This opener thing is very interesting. And we could take, like, legit predictive information. Like, this is sustainable because of what they're doing specifically. But this year, I think you're right about what you're saying about those teams with the big numbers. Maybe we've missed the boat. But up until this point, that's been the story. Like, baseball has been so haves and have-nots that there really isn't a gem in there, you know, that we can take out of there. We're like, oh, you know, I'm just randomly select a team. Oh, that's interesting. I wouldn't have expected them to be that good or that bad. To this point. But that's the exercise, right? We got to figure out from this data, is there anything? And I don't think there's a lot.
And how often do you see teams that run away to 80-41 records continue to play that well into September? Very often, do you remember the Dodger team a couple years ago that had a run of like 60-5 or some ridiculous number?
Last year, the Dodgers had unbelievable winning.
Last year?
Yeah, massive winning stretch, and then it flipped for like 2-3 weeks after that. They were terrible at it.
Right, and I remember very often the team that's way, way out in front in September stops really trying, and they start playing a bunch of guys, and then all of a sudden, so I don't think it's going to be predictive going forward.
Yeah.
It would be very interesting to see what the numbers are for the last 40 games.
I mean, that's why I think it's a fun exercise to go through, because it does stimulate the brain, and it does require us to sort of look at baseball through a different prism and say, okay, well, that's great. Is there anything we can cull from it? I would argue this year probably less than most years, and there's no sense in thinking that any of that will manifest because of the dynamics of what you're saying. Like, there's some teams like the Yankees and the Dodgers are so far out in front. Will they start to rest players sooner than normal? They can kind of coast into 100-win seasons at this point, though. Even if they go 500, they're 100-win teams.
And here's actionable information.
Please.
People are going to forget in September that there is a baseball season still going.
No question.
Because they're going to all be on the football.
Uh-huh.
All day long, it's going to be football wall to wall.
Yep.
And who doesn't love football? I love football.
We love football.
They're going to forget, and the lines in baseball are going to get a little softer. I notice this every year.
Yeah.
In September, people are not on the tip-top, sharp razor point of their game because everyone moves over to football.
And by the way, for the home run race, a lot of people are like, oh, Cody Bellinger's going to sit because they're far out. He's not going to sit. By the way, middle relief, what did I say yesterday? Home run against middle relief? Yesterday, bingo, bango, 39. Three-way tie, 39 right now. It's a sprint. Trout, Bellinger, Yelich, all at 39. Alonso at 38. And Soler and Acuna Jr., the sneaky, freaky brother sneaking in from the rear. They're, like, making some noise now, too. Everybody's got just tons of homers. It's a juice ball. I don't know if you know that. Juice ball. We'll come back. We'll do the first inning numbers on Q3 on a numbers game right here at VSiN.
Welcome back to A Numbers Game with Gil Alexander.
VSiN's Pro Football Betting Guide, ready for download on Friday. Just a friendly reminder. Purchase a 60-page digital magazine before Friday. You get it for $9.99. That's $9.99. After Friday, $19.99. Or get the College Football Betting Guide along with the Pro Guide for just $25. Got all that? Plus, you can consider an all access subscription, that is. All of that information, VSiN.com/betfootball. That for any plan that works for you, including a free trial. That's VSiN.com/betfootball. I mentioned we get tweets and texts on the show. I just want to point out, again, for those who listen to the show, you know I'm always referencing a three-way text between me, Chris Felica, and our buddy E. And they comment on everything that goes on, and I love them for it. And sometimes it's phenomenal. My buddy E., he says this, Todd. He's piling on me, saying, of course, run distribution isn't even. He says, of course, run distribution isn't even. Third inning should be least bottom of order. That's a good point.
That was my point. I said I didn't know what it was. I said fifth might be the most. I wasn't sure. I didn't say I know which one. I knew it wasn't going to be even.
Don't get defensive. All right, let's wrap up with the first innings here. First innings. These are proprietary stats. You won't hear these anywhere else. I actually track what pitchers are doing in the first innings of games. Don't read into that. I'm not suggesting that's how I make my first inning bets, which we've become famous for on this show. But just to let you know, this year in Major League Baseball, minimum 45 plate appearances faced. Do it through the prism of on-base average allowed. The worst starting pitcher in baseball this year is actually Jeremy Hellickson, who you will not see listed anytime soon. Dylan.
What are we talking about now here?
Let me actually up this from 45 to 50 because I'm getting some names of guys that aren't even, like, you know, in major league lineups right now or major league rosters. They're all, like, down.
Are we talking about the worst pitchers for the year?
Yeah.
Is
so
Drew
first
Smiley
first
out
innings.
There?
First innings.
Oh, first innings.
Just
okay.
First innings. For those who bet first innings and are interested in this kind of thing. So minimum 50 plate appearances faced. So this is better. The worst in terms of opponents on base average, Michael Wacha. 409 opposing on base percentage first innings. Kyle Freeland, second worst, 407 allowed.
Makes sense.
Drew Pomerantz, third, 404
definitely
allowed.
Makes sense.
Jose Ureña, Aaron Brooks, Ross Stripling, Jordan Zimmermann, Trevor Williams.
Ross Stripling is a surprise on that list.
Yeah. Here are the best in the first inning. These are the guys that they show up. Yanni Chirinos, the best first inning pitcher in all of baseball thus far this year.
Hmm.
175 on base.
By the way, think
allowed.
About in the first inning, you're going against the best hitters of the other team.
Yes, you are.
So this kind of means something a little bit.
It does, and it's just sort of, you know, a shout to, again, the Tampa Bay Rays for the whole opener thing. There's Yanni Chirinos. So everything the Rays are doing, they are smart. They're doing it for a reason. It's working out. Walker Buehler, next best, first innings. By the way, Clayton Kershaw has always been on this list for years. Now the Dodgers replace him with Walker Buehler for first inning performance. Only a 208 on-base average allowed. Chris Paddock, 211 on-base allowed first innings. Frankie Montas, Domingo Germán, John Means, your boy, John Means of the Orioles.
Oh, he's regressing fast.
Kyle Gibson, Griffin Canning, Jack Flaherty, Michael Pineda, Jacob deGrom.
By the way, that's kind of a surprising list because you don't see all the huge names on there.
Yeah, no, that's true. That's true.
I mean, some of them, but, you know, some of them are like...
I actually cut it off right at deGrom, who is 11th, but then it's right after him where you see some of the big names. deGrom, Velasquez. Let's forget him for a second. Ryu, Verlander, Strasburg. So they're there. They're just not top 10.
Flaherty doesn't surprise me because I think he's been having a real under-the-radar great. Him and Sonny Gray are my two under-the-radar great pitch. I mean, people who follow it know, but yeah. if you ask people out there, oh, who's been really outstanding and people don't know about
Jack Flaherty would not come up in their on their list, right?
But Jack Flaherty's been really good.
Yeah, he's been really good. All right. I hope you enjoyed Q3 MLB Derivatives.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast, is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.